Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Wernie, and joining me on the line, as always, the rascal from Rakdos, the boy from Beamtown. It's Ethan Sachs, ladies and gentlemen. Ethan, how are you doing this fine morning?
I'm doing great. I'm loving this. I feel like sort of a challenge accepted type thing where you have adopted my intro for Charlie on the Survivor podcast into our Lords of Limited podcast, and I'm here for it.
I absolutely have. I've also had plenty of time to think before sitting down to record the last 2 weeks, which is good.
I love it. I love it so much. Yeah. We'll be chatting a little bit about Rakdos. I've had a bit of an epiphany, a bit of a diamond in the rough found in March of the Machine draft. And we've got some hype to talk about this week in that we've got two Pro Tour drafts. Paper Magic is back, Ben.
Man, the PT being back is awesome. I cannot tell you how much more invested I am in this because there's Limited than when Limited was missing from the arena stuff. And I think if Limited had been a part of the arena stuff, I would have still been pretty darn invested just because High Stakes Limited is awesome. But the fact that it's back in paper is just incredible. This is my, whatever, four times a year that I actually watch some standard. Ooh. There's just been content overflowing this weekend. I can't keep up. The NBA playoffs, I'm trying to draft Rakdos decks. I'm watching the PT. Like, I am on content overload.
Hashtag gumption, Ben.
Hashtag gumption.
Yeah, so we've got a lot to discuss today. We'll explain what hashtag gumption is in just a second, get some housekeeping stuff out of the way. First things first is the Patreon page, patreon.com/lordsoflimited, is where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. We talk about the Discord being like 24/7 limited tech support, something that folks get access to. Everybody who gives back via the Patreon gets access to the Discord. We had a really sweet addition. I just sort of was like, oh, we should have, you know, we have a like LOL versus LR showdown watch party, which I don't really get to be a part of because I'm participating in the showdown. I can't like chat while watching it, but I was like, oh, we should start one for these, you know, high stakes events. So I started a Pro Tour Minneapolis watch party chat, and it was really fun because I mean Twitch chat for the Magic channel is a little rough, I would say, but it was really nice to just get to chat with like our friends, our Discord folks, over the weekend, especially during the drafting portion.
Yeah, it was awesome. I was holed up in the bathroom at school watching on my phone, chatting in Discord a little bit. It was great.
I was wondering, but like, you know, there's lots of like, why, when does the Pro Tour draft start? And Ben was like, it's at noon. I was like, aren't you at school right now? It's Friday.
I was, but we're on a bit of a weird schedule a couple different times because we have like testing going on towards the end of the year. So have a little bit of empty time in the schedule and made judicious use of it watching the Pro Tour on my phone.
Glad to hear it. So anyway, a lot of awesome stuff happening at the Patreon page. You get access to that awesome community of the Discord, get access to a number of other things as you move up the reward tier ranks. All the way up, you get access to monthly coaching sessions with me or Ben. So if any or all of that sounds of interest to you, or you just want to show us some love with your dollar bills, we really appreciate it. And of course, each and every week, we want to shout out our new patrons when they join. So this week, we're welcoming Chris, Wonki, Dan, General Mills, Muhammad, Mike, Paul, Andrew, Sam, Max, Lionel, and Dominic. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah, cannot say thank you enough. Show is also brought to you by CoolStuffInc.com, where they've got cool stuff in stock. And that stuff in stock is March of the Machine sealed product. This format continues to grow in popularity. I've been doing some losing, but I think I've turned a corner, been winning a lot more. And regardless, win or lose, which is really a testament to this format, I think, I've been having fun in the vast majority of games, even when I'm losing. You win hard and you lose hard. You just got to be mentally prepared for the losing hard.
There's some goat scuttle floating around on Twitter. Maybe LSV thinks it's the goat. Sigrist thinks it's the goat, you know?
Usually we're the ones prematurely starting goat talk.
I know.
I'm glad to have had like a warm take. I gave the format a warm welcome. I'm having fun. I'm enjoying it. I do not think it is in goat contention for me, but I have been having a blast.
I agree.
So when you're shopping at CoolStuffInc.com, maybe you want to pick up a box of March of the Machine sealed product to draft again down the road. I know I'm going to be doing that. Haven't done it yet, but I'm going to get on CoolStuffInc.com and pull the trigger. And when I do, you better believe I'm going to be using checkout code LOL, all caps, to get 5% off anything in the store. And we would really appreciate you taking the time to shop at CoolStuffInc.com if you're purchasing Magic cards online and using that checkout code so that we can show CoolStuffInc.com that our listenership is going to support their business.
And speaking of cool stuff, there's a lot of other great content that they support over there. Number one, I would say, is Jim Davis, who had just a banger of a Friday. I believe he was one of two or the only 8-0 player to start the Pro Tour, which is just absolutely incredible. And I think this is his second 8-0 day one that he's had in his career. And I just want to like shout out Jim. I know that day two didn't go as he would have hoped with that 8-0 start, but it's still just like an incredible run. And I just want to shout him out as someone I am constantly in awe of. Like, he is a prolific and consistent content creator, like always putting out YouTube stuff and articles. And he's also consistent with his like Mog Mondays and Throwback Thursdays on Twitter. And like, he always streams on top of all that and is also excellent at Magic and excellent at both limited and constructed. That's just very, very hard to do.
And a family man, recent father, right?
Recent father of now two. Yeah, so like recent father of a newborn for sure. Yeah, it's very incredible. So congrats to Jim over at Cool Stuff for the 8-0 start on Friday.
Awesome.
All right, let's get into a wee bit of a format update before we dive into these Pro Tour drafts. So when last we left you on Lords of Limited, we were in the middle of the Arena Open, and I sadly went 2-2 in my first draft with that Nutter Butters blue-black deck that I had. The draft and the matches are edited for your convenience. I have the games up on our YouTube channel. So some really good, you know, gameplay and lots of sideboarding. I forgot about sideboarding, Ben.
Oh, it's so good. It was so good in this format specifically too.
Yeah. Just like lots of, oh, okay. I was swapping 7-8 cards between games sometimes. It was kind of crazy.
Yeah. I swapped out in and out entire colors in my first one. I went 3-1 and qualified for the second draft, drafted green-white in the second draft, a really good, I think, tight green-white deck, and then just promptly didn't get to play Magic. Mulliganed a couple times and got steamrolled in the first round of draft two, but had a blast. And I do think this format in a higher stakes draft pod felt way better to me, and also getting to sideboard.
Just so we're clear, you don't draft with exclusively day two people.
Yes, I agree. Okay. Like there's random best of three people mixed in there, but the vast majority of people that you're queuing with are day two drafters.
I would imagine so. Yes, I agree with that for sure. Yeah, and we should shout out that there is another one of these in 2 weeks. So next weekend is a limited qualifier, which there was a best of one play-in for that yesterday that I 6-0'd. So queued for that. And then on Friday, there will be best of three qualifier play-ins for a sealed tournament all weekend, next weekend. And then the weekend after is another March of the Machine Arena Open, which is crazy. We get so much high stakes limited.
There's too much content.
Too much content, says Ben. Speaking of content, would I be Lord Tupperware if I didn't talk about companions on this podcast? I would not. I have checked off 8 of the 10 companioned so far, Ben. I still need to catch Kahira and Obosh to have them all, but 8 out of 10 so far. Where are you at?
I'm 2 for 10, baby. I've done Yorion and Othreed, and I've done Lurrus and Othreed.
Great. Yeah, well, so that's a ringing endorsement right there. I wanted to talk about the website that shall not be named on the Pro Tour coverage, which is 17lands.com. Hit up 17lands.com. I know. I don't love that for them, because I do love 17lands.com. Hit them up. They've got a Patreon. Support them over there as well. We chatted about some cards that maybe had surprised us last week. Maybe looking at the data, didn't quite understand it from just the face value numbers, that I've had a chance to get my hands on quite a bit this week that I wanted to talk about. First up is Omen Hawker. That's the single blue 1/1 that taps for colorless and a blue mana, but you can only use it to activate abilities. I started off the week kind of obsessed with this card. I tweeted that this plus that Urn, that's the one that you can pay 2 mana to filter into any color of mana, and then you can pay 6 tap sack it to blow up a creature or enchantment. I tweeted that that plus Urn was Birds of Paradise, which it kind of is.
A 2-card Birds of Paradise, yeah.
2-card Birds of Paradise, but then also the Omen Hawker turns the Urn into a 4-mana removal spell instead of a 6-mana removal spell. Equipment costs it uses for, obviously Incubate flips. It's a pretty dang good card. Unfortunately, I think the days of it wheeling are gone, and so I'm not sure like when you're supposed to go all in on it, because it was kind of, that was part of the benefit of it was, ooh, I can peg it in this pack and I'm going to get it pick 10 or whatever.
Yes. Also, the days of blue being wide open, I think, are fewer and far between from the pods that I've been in lately. I'm a little more hesitant to try to go into blue. I think I'm only doing it for Preening Champ at common. I keep getting into trouble when I go into blue for a Pharos Dispersal. Like, having to pick Dispersal highly feels pretty bad.
Right. Part of why blue was so good is you got Eyes of Gitaxias pick 10. And now you're not getting that.
Sometimes you are.
Sometimes you are. But I think the days of that being consistent are definitely gone. And I think people need to catch up. I was doing quite a bit of coaching towards the end of the week and had a lot of draft logs where I was like, stop getting into blue at common for these cards. Because part of the reason you could do that was like, even pregaming champ, people like didn't quite know or didn't quite respect. So I agree with that take. And that'll get us to our hashtag gumption in just a second. Another card that I got a chance to get my hands on is Aerial Boost, the one in a white +2/+2 and flying trick that has Convoke. I didn't quite realize how nuts this card is with the amount of vigilance that white plays with. Like the fact that you get to add to the board and attack and threaten to use your combat trick is really busted. Have you had a chance to play with this yet?
I've played with it more since last week, and I had played with it once or twice. I completely get it now compared to Divine Intervention. It's free. Like, that's the reason, right? Both of them are tricks, and you're trying to outmaneuver your opponent. And one of them, you have to leave 2 mana up to be able to try to outmaneuver your opponent. And Aerial Boost, while covers less situations, in total, still covers a lot of situations and is completely free.
Yep, that's the thing. I'm still not a huge fan of white. I think white has fallen pretty far for me in terms of the color power rankings. Where are you at with white decks these days?
I'm fine with white. I think it's all fine. I really do. Is not a hot take, but I think it's all fine. Like white blue's great. Like you can still get steamrolled by a white red deck or a white green deck or like a white black deck if there's just some rares floating around. I feel fine about all of it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that is kind of a hot take. I think a lot of the regular takes are about what we're going to get to, which is that red is unplayable, right? Red is terrible. It's the worst color. And to that, we were chatting last week about Furnace Rains. I had posed the question to you, like, why is this red's top performing uncommon? And you were like, I don't know, who cares about data? And we got some follow-up information from folks in our Discord about how Furnace Rains, and this is the active treason effect, sorry, the steal a creature, you get it for a turn. If it deals damage to a player or a battle, you get a treasure, which is also quite relevant. But Furnace Rains stats in particular in red-black was what was boosting it. And so it was like red-black pulling it up a lot. And that brings me to my main point for this week, which is that Rakdos is nuts. It is currently forceable in like 90%+ of drafts. And I need to give it a formal apology on the show because a couple weeks ago, I came to you, Ben. We were talking about this red-black deck I drafted. It went 3-3. The wins were scrappy. The losses were resounding losses. And I didn't think it was a good deck and whatever. I get it now. And the main card I was missing, and we'll talk about why Furnace Rains is also very good in it, but the key card that I was missing in red-black that is the truth for me right now is Beamtown Beatstick. That's the red equipment, equip cost of 2, equipped creature gets +1/+0, and menace, and when it deals damage to a player or battle, you get a treasure token. This card is the truth.
I would like to co-sign this. Usually your tangents of like, I found the worst color and I found out how to make it work and I'm going to do it all the time. Usually I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, still just kind of want to keep playing with the best color. But I am 100% co-signing this take. And we talked about Beamtown Beatstick last week, too. I was saying, right, you know, it's been really impressive. I've lost to it quite a bit. It's put me in some troublesome spots. But I still hadn't even seen it pop off in the red-black treasures deck. And it is kind of red-black treasures sacrifice, right? Not just red-black sacrifice. Because the treasures you get from the Beatstick are then just free equity to where you get all the sacrifice synergy, but don't have to reduce your board for the sacrifice synergy.
Right. That's the exact thing, is that this is a repeatable source of treasures for you, which just does a world for this deck. And not only that, but the menace and +1/+0 helps you pressure your opponent. It turns all of the cards that you're interested in putting in the deck, your like cheap one ones, your Nozumi informants, maybe Ral's reinforcements, Ichor Drinker, it turns them all into threats. Like menace and +1/+0 is a big boost. And what you're talking about with it's really a treasure sacrifice deck is so true, because all the things that can sacrifice stuff can sacrifice treasures, can sacrifice artifacts. And so your Dreg Recycler can sack artifacts to drain them for one, or your Stormclaw Rager, the one black red 2/2, you can pay one to sacrifice stuff at sorcery speed to draw a card and put a +1/+1 counter on it. That also can sacrifice treasures. So that all adds to this deck. And then the main thing why we're calling this episode Jury Duty is that Jury cares about whenever you sacrifice permanence. And so that's the black-red 1-1 grows when you sacrifice permanence, and then when it dies, it deals damage to any target equal to its power. Treasures plus Jury is the real deal.
Super real deal. And not only that, but here's the selling point where you sold me, right? Is that no other deck wants Jury, right? Like, so many other, like, you're blue-black. People are poaching and splashing your Halo Foragers. You're blue-black. People are poaching and splashing your Invasion of Amonkhets. No deck except hyper-focused red-black wants Jury.
Well, and I think that extends to the other two cards as well, the Sacrifice Outlet, the 3-mana Sacrifice Outlet, and Invasion of Azghul, which is excellent. Like, it's not Invasion of Amonkhet, but it's probably one of, if not the second best battle at Uncommon, in my opinion.
Well, and also with the battles, the Beatstick makes it so much harder for your opponents to want to play defense against the battles. Like, all of a sudden, are they leaving back three things to protect their Invasion of Azghul so that your Beatstick creature can't get in on it, you know?
And then there's other uncommons. So not only do you get the signpost uncommons for the deck that float around, there's other uncommons that no deck wants. So Furnace Rains. And Furnace Rains in this deck, because there's so much sacrifice outlet stuff, right? You've not only got the repeatable sac outlets, but you've got Final Flourish that can also sacrifice treasures, as Ben found out live on stream last night. Final Flourish is the one on a black. Something gets -2/-2, or if you sac a creature or artifact, it gets -6/-6 until end of turn instead. That can sacrifice treasures. But so Furnace Rains in this deck is basically like a 3-mana Deadly Derision, because it's 3-mana, kill a thing, get a treasure. And the treasures, not only, like, the treasures do so much for the deck in terms of ramping, but they also do so much in terms of fixing as well. Some of my decks, and I've drafted this deck a lot over the past few days. I am, like I said, basically forcing it. I have done it, what now? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I'm on my 7th right now. And here's my record with these. 6-3, 5-3, 7-2, 7-1, 6-3, 4-3, and I'm 5-1 currently with this one. So this deck, and this is in Diamond into High Mythic.
You were top 10 Mythic when I was watching you.
Yeah, I was number 6. I mean, it's early in the season, so that's not, doesn't say a ton, but like, the deck is performing. This deck is not just like, it's not a meme. As Ben said, he's usually like, okay, Ethan, this is cute, but like, how do people actually win? This is how you can actually win. And I am literally going in and forcing this deck. I took Volcanic Spite, pack one, pick one, over the green, white, Galta rare. Like, I'm just not interested in it. And it feels like how I often approach Jund in Cube. It's like, yeah, you could get a good blue deck. You could get a good green splash all the good cards deck in this format. But people are wise to those decks, and you might or you might not get it. I really feel like this Rakdos deck is doable like 90%+ of the time.
Well, and it... And it takes a certain bit of discipline to do what you're talking about, which is where hashtag gumption came from. You're like, now, Ben, you're going to do this. You can't be derping around. And one of my favorite things to do in powerful draft formats is derp around and waffle. Yeah. And you get yourself in a little bit of trouble. Like, we went through one of my draft logs after you first showed me this, and I had like speculated on some cards that let me miss filler for the deck that ultimately took away my ability to force it, and I could have, I think, forced it had I not speculated on some other powerful cards. And I've drafted the deck 2 times in a row after that as well, to good success once, 7-1, and then 1-3 with a good version of the deck. I think just got a little unlucky.
Yeah.
And then the last draft I did, it wasn't really open, and I pivoted into red-green. I do think, in hindsight, I could have probably forced it there, but I'm a red-green splash all the bombs deck, so I think if you don't know how to force, this is like a whole other topic, I think, for an episode, maybe, is like how to force niche decks like this when they're pretty consistently open. And I think that would be a really interesting episode down the road. But you're trying to steer into, I think, black is probably the safest place to steer to, right? And then, like, you just know you're going to wheel the gold cards most of the time,
right? That's the thing. And it's not only those signpost uncommon gold cards, but also other commons like Furnace Rains. Furnace Gremlin is very good in this deck as double bodies. That's the one in a red 1/2 that has one in a red +1/+0 until end of turn. And when it dies, you make an incubate token with counters equal to its power. Valduk is quite good in this deck because you're playing 2, 3, 4 copies of Beamtown Beatstick sometimes. These are all cards that basically nobody else wants. They're all just going around the table. And so you can get them late. I got, you know, I think I got a pick 8 Jury in one draft, a pack 1 pick 11 Jury in another draft. This deck currently capitalizes on people's love for blue decks and their hate for red decks.
And after we talk about it, if a lot of people listen to the show, who knows, maybe it's not going to be as open. But certainly a deck you should keep your eye out to draft forwards and steer towards. And I think another thing, too, is Dreg Recycler just being a free sacrifice outlet at common. Also, just a very important piece for the deck that you're going to reliably get. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's totally true. I was showing this deck and some of these shells to someone I was coaching with, and they were like, well, so this deck exists entirely at uncommon. You need the uncommons. I was like, who cares? There's like 8 uncommons in every pack in this format. Like, the thing you should be focusing on is that the deck doesn't need rares. I had a version of this deck where I took Iara, not the the multiverse one, but the one in this format, the double-faced one, one black-black, tap, sack a thing, it deals damage to your opponent or a battle, and you gain that much life, whatever. I had the opportunity to take that or a second Furnace Rains. I absolutely, at the end of it, wanted the second Furnace Rains. I did not need this 3-mana sacrifice outlet. This deck, like, yeah, it exists at uncommon, but like I said, there's like, whatever, half the pack is uncommon sometimes.
Yeah, well, and I think the other thing that this deck has done for me personally, and this is probably another like fleshed out topic for a whole episode, but I've been fairly at sea in the format in that I don't know what I want to do because nothing keeps working for me. And there are some formats like that for everyone, right? Maybe not this format, but we've all had that format that just hasn't clicked and you lose. And then once you're losing a bunch, it's really hard to tell what's actually good or where you're going wrong or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm so used to in a format having like a subset of 3 or 4 decks that I can steer towards almost every draft, no matter what goes on in the draft. And I just haven't had that here. So I've been letting my rares push me different directions. And I've been speculating a lot just on powerful cards. And I do think you navigating towards a deck in this format is very helpful, especially when the packs are weak or you don't have a clear direction otherwise. Like, knowing how to draft this deck and what the pieces are just feels like it's opened up the draft format for me so much, because when picks are close and I'm like, I don't really know what I want to do, now I have something that I want to do or can do reliably. And this led me down another train of thought, which is that I think I've drafted blue-white soldiers maybe once, which can't possibly be right, because it's one of the best
because
in the
it's actually not a deck in the format. It's knights.
Dang it. You would say we set that up for the content, but that would be a lie. I'm an idiot.
That was just real. Okay, sorry. What were you actually saying about blue-white knights?
What I was actually saying about blue-white knights is that I've only drafted it once.
Get it together.
I'll get it together. I've only drafted it once, and that can't possibly be right because it's one of the best decks in the format. And I pegged it that way early on, right? So I don't know if I should have been trying harder to get into it. Like, there's no way I've done 50 drafts or 60 drafts or whatever I've done, and it was right to be blue-white in my seat once. So figuring out, much like red-black, how you can start to draft towards it to raise the likelihood that you end up in that deck. And I have done that for blue-black quite successfully. I've ended up in blue-black a lot and just lost, unfortunately, but should have probably been drafting blue-white in there too. And I want to think about what you've done for red-black here for how to do that for blue-white. And maybe now is not the right time while blue's a smidge overdrafted, but just having a concept like this for a deck in your mind during the draft is pretty important, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the two cards come to mind for me about blue-white knights that I see as, oh, that's like a payoff, or that's like it fits into this red-black idea of, you know, it's a good card for the deck that I don't want to spend an early pick on, and that's the 2-mana 3/1 in white that gets first strike if you've played a knight that turn, and was it Porcelain Knight, the 4-mana 3/4 in blue that taps a thing, keeps it tapped if you have a knight. I think those cards, I see them consistently late, and I'm like, I know those are good. I've lost to them in knight's decks, and maybe those are cards that you could do a similar thing with for a blue-white aggro shell of like, these are cards, like when the packs are weak, I just take these knights cards because no one else wants them.
Right. Well, and one of the best things too, I think about this Rakdos deck and blue-white also, and maybe you can do a similar thing with Aerial Boost, but that both of them are pretty aggressive and pressure opponents. I think that's what's been missing from me when I've been losing a lot is I've been trying to get my power level high, right? And so I've been trying to do that by speculating a lot on really powerful cards and then getting some powerful cards and then just getting them into a deck. But you can also get power from a super streamlined deck, right? Which this red black deck is, which blue white is. I was watching Kyle Rose Ham TV draft blue white last night, and he was kind of approaching it similarly in that he seemed like he really wanted to be blue white or blue black and was pretty consistently steering into blue white. But that ultimately, whether you're doing it with red black or blue white, just ending up in a really synergistic, powerful aggro deck is a good place to attack the format from right now. And I think I've been kind of ending up in less focused mid-rangey decks with maybe some more powerful cards, because it took me a little longer to get there in the draft, or I didn't have a clear idea of what I was shooting for in my head, you know?
Yeah, I think that speaks to, going back to your initial takes of it, is the cube-like nature of the format, right? Like, you can do that in cube so much. Like, largely, you can go into a cube draft, and if there's a deck you want to draft, you can draft it. Now, will it always be the best version of that? No, but you can probably get a version of that. And I think you can do that here with a number of these archetypes, especially these lesser sought-after ones.
All right. Ooh, so good. I just want to talk more about that. But we got some PT drafts to get to.
That's right. Okay, let's talk about drafting this format in paper. What a wild ride, huh?
Yeah, holy cow. So they did this thing at the PT where they, and I was expecting this, where you flip the cards and, you know, you hold them up in front of you and everybody can kind of see your flip cards when you open your pack one, pick one, and everybody's like craning their necks to look around the table at who opened what bombs where to try to figure out what colors to stay away from. But then the weird thing was that they've never done before, that to my knowledge, they had everybody sleeve the cards so that you didn't ultimately know what was picked, but you know what was picked, right? Like, so Reed opens pack one, pick one, Invasion of Fiora, which is the Black Wrath, and Kenra Spellspear, the 2/2 that flips into the prowess creature with ward. And you know Reed is taking Invasion of Fiora almost 100% of the time.
Right.
So what I'm wondering is, to avoid this awkwardness, why didn't they just have everyone pre-sleeve the packs while they were stamping and, you know, like tying them together in those paper sleeves that they do?
Yeah, I wondered, there's no way they had people sleeve them at every table, right? Or did they?
I would assume so, for competitive integrity. No?
Yeah, so then just like, I don't know, maybe that's a terrible day for a bunch of judges, is like sleeving these packs beforehand.
But you're already stamping. Like, it's already a terrible day.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, each card is individually stamped. Why not sleeve while you're doing that? It's already a miserable day.
Okay, I agree. I'm with you.
But so that was weird about it. And maybe that is more time intensive. Like, I'm not on coverage. Maybe that's more time intensive than is feasible.
Mm.
But it was awkward. And then what they also didn't do was, I think coverage was incredible, but as a limited viewer, the camera not panning in on every single person's two cards that were revealed was incredibly tilting to me, because you just, it's information you need to follow along with the draft in a competitive sense, because there's big implications for people opening powerful cards in those seats. And I think the second day they did a better job of panning around the table, but day one we saw hardly any of the cards that were revealed by people.
Yeah, maybe this is a topic for it's a topic for a different kind of podcast, but like, that is something that you really want. And I'm not sure if that's something that everyone wants.
Sure.
Every viewer
yes,
wants.
That's fair. Yeah.
But
yeah.
I also, but that's my larger issue with Pro Tour coverage, is that Magic coverage in general, like, doesn't really know who its audience is, I think. Like, I have a struggle with, like, who is this for? Is this for, like, the most entrenched player? Or is this to get people excited about Limited? And I feel like they try and do everything.
Toe the line in between.
You know?
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
It's not very successful in my mind. But anyway, that's, like I said, topic for someone else's podcast, I guess.
Because we know who our audience is, and it's you all, dear listeners.
That's right. And we know that you want that spiky content, and we also know that you're going to slam Invasion of Fiora like Reed does.
Yeah. So pack one, pick one. Reed gets that Invasion of Fiora. And worth noting, two to his right, an Alesh Norn is open. The new Alesh Norn, the flip card that flips into a saga. So Reed is maybe going to be thinking he wants to stay out of white if he can, but that was the only other thing we could see, was Reed's opens of Invasion of Fiora and Kenra Spellspear, and then Alesh Norn, two to his right.
Great.
All right, so pack one, pick one. You slam that Invasion of Fiora. Pack one, pick two. You see the following cards as options. So Skittering Surveyor, 3 mana for the 1/2 that lets you search up a land. There's Invasion of Muraganda. Ooh, these invasions are going to test me. This is the green invasion that puts a +1/+1 counter on something and then lets you fight a creature. There's Gift and Completion, the 1 in a black enchantment that lets you incubate 3, and then when a Phyrexian dies, you scry 1. There's a rare Dust Legion Duelist. That's the 1 in a white 2/2 that whenever a +1/+1 counter is placed on it, you get a draw card, and it's also got Vigilance. There's Mirror Shield Hoplite, the red-white uncommon, and then Niv-Mizzet, 5-color spice incoming. What do you take here?
I mean, this is a pretty, for me, pretty clear Gift of Completion, which I'm curious about your take, because I know we were chatting about this yesterday, that you are not a huge fan of this card.
I just keep losing with it. That there's like a list of 4 cards that intellectually I know are good, and I think other people value highly, and other people do well with those cards against me, and I just keep getting into bad spots with them, and Gift of Completion is on that list. I would not take Gift here. I'm low enough on it that I would take, I think, either Skittering Surveyor or Dust Legion Duelist. I think with the information I had about Eleshnorn, I would pass the Dust Legion Duelist because Black-White also doesn't particularly care about getting plus one, plus one counters on Dust Legion Duelist. It's more of a green-white card or a red-white card with backup. So I think, honestly, with Invasion and the table knowing that I have Invasion, I would take Skittering Surveyor just so I could be pretty flexible. It's going to help me find land drops towards my Invasion of Fiora.
But, like, you can't splash Invasion of Fiora, really. I mean, you can, but your mana has to be really, really good. So there's, like, two takes, right? Is that the you taking Invasion of Fiora, the table's going to steer clear of black, like you're already talking about doing in terms of, well, two to my right, someone opened Eleshnorn, so even though I like Dusk Legion Duelist, I'm not going to take it here because I don't want to get into white under someone else. The table may just be like, eh, we know Reed's drafting black. We're not going to fight him for it.
Yeah, but I just like Skittering Surveyor more than Gift of Completion. That's, it's not even a
that's
like,
wild
wanting to avoid black or whatever. I just like Skittering Surveyor better. And I think it keeps you more flexible.
Yeah. I don't know. I think Gift is a really good two drop.
But it's a four drop. That's the thing, right? Like you put it in your two drop slot, but it's not a two drop.
Yeah. But a 3/3 really makes up for it, you know?
Sometimes. Gift of Completion being your two drop on the draw feels pretty terrible.
I agree. You have the option to mulligan. I'll tell you that. You can't do it.
All right. So Reed agrees with Ethan and takes Gift of Completion here. Moving on to pack one, pick three. There are some options. There's an Izumi Informant, the 1/1 rat that makes you discard a card, or your opponent discard a card, rather. That's much better. There's Elspeth Smite, the single white, deal 3 to an attacking or blocking creature. There's Seal from Existence, the enchantment removal spell, the O-Ring effect with Ward 3. And there's also a Storm the Seed Core, the 2 green-green sorcery that puts 4 plus 1 plus 1 counters combined in any way among your creatures, and they get Vigilance and something else, maybe.
It's Vigilance and Trample.
There we go.
Yeah, I mean, this seems like a pretty straightforward Nezumi Informant to me, especially given the Gift of Completion pick 2.
Yeah, how close is Seal from Existence for you, knowing that Eleshnorn was open 2 to your right? Does that play into it at all? Or are you taking Nezumi Informant here over Seal from Existence, regardless of whether or not you know Eleshnorn was open 2 to your right?
So, yeah, if I know nothing about 2 to my right, I'm still taking Informant here because, like, in my mind, Invasion of Fiora is a real pull into black, and I assume it is for you as well.
Yes.
And so that's why I would still take Gift of Completion pick 2 over Dusk Legion Duelist or whatever, not knowing about white 2 down the road, because I'm going to warp my pick order for black cards. And I like Gift well enough. I don't think I'm taking a hidden power level. I'm not even sure I am at all over those other cards. Like, if it's not the best card, it's close. And same deal here, like Nezumi Informant, yes. Is it worse than Seal? I agree. It's worse than Elspeth Smite. Yeah, probably. But it's good in a black deck and gets me deeper into black and ensures more that I get to play Invasion of Fiora. That's my thinking.
Yeah, that's for sure. I agree. I think it's close here. I would also, after taking Gift, I would also take Nezumi Informant. I think if I had taken Skittering Surveyor, I would be much more interested in Seal as a card just to lock up a removal spell, which I assume is going to get cut off pretty heavily at the Pro Tour. And it's also seemed to be the case on day 2 of the Arena Open, was that it was tough to find removal in some packs.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Reed agrees with you and takes Nezumi Informant. And then moving on to pack 1, pick 4. See the following cards as option with an Invasion, a Gift of Completion, and a Nezumi Informant in your pile. There's Furia, Sigil of Valor. That's the black-white gold uncommon, the 2/4 flying lifelink angel. If you double spell, you get to look at the top 3 and put 1 in your hand. There's Invasion of Eldraine. That's the 3 and a black enchantment that mind rots your opponent and then flips into a 2/2 that does 2 damage to your opponent if they have 2 or fewer cards in hand on their upkeep. There's also a Sigiled Sentinel, the 2/2 with backup 1 and vigilance, and Tenured Oil Caster, the 2/4 with menace, and then gets pumped if your opponent has 8 or more cards in their graveyard.
Yeah, this would seem to me like, again, a pretty clear-cut take-a-black-card Invasion of Eldraine pick. Like, I've liked Invasion of Eldraine just fine in this format, so I would happily take that here.
Yeah, I would also be on Invasion of Eldraine here. Reed disagrees. And the usual disclaimer that we did not give at the beginning of this, that neither Ethan nor I are on the Pro Tour, nor anywhere near as good of a Magic player as Reed Duke. We are just two blokes, armchair quarterbacking this draft. And I think Reed took Furia here, and I think it was a bit of a mistake. I would take Invasion of Eldraine, I think, 10 out of 10 times, but maybe Reed knows something about Black-White from their testing houses and maybe pod play that we don't know.
I guess that's true. I have not cast a Furia yet in this format, and I hope to never do so. that's my feeling.
I don't know if I would go that far. I mean, it's fine in black, white, but Invasion of Eldraine, I think, is just a higher impact card and keeps you one color.
Yeah.
So maybe a slight miss there from Reed. So he took Furia. Moving on to pack one, pick five. Reed gets a Dreg Recycler. That's the 2/2 that taps to sacrifice a creature or an artifact to drain and gain out of a pretty weak pack. There's nothing else of interest there. And honestly, the rest of pack one is pretty straightforward for him.
That's what I think. I think there's like a couple, the next pick is kind of interesting because he has to not take a black card. He has a choice in my mind between Furnace Gremlin, the aforementioned one on a red 1/2 that has smoke breathing. And then when it dies, it makes an incubate token equal to its power. And Oracle of Tragedy. I'm just too high on this card, I guess. This is the one on blue 1/3. When it enters the battlefield or dies, you get to choose one, draw a card if you do discard a card, or shuffle up to four cards with mana value 3 or more from your graveyard into your library. I like Oracle.
Mm-hmm.
Am I not supposed to like Oracle?
I like Oracle too. We're both wrong.
I would be inclined to take Oracle there, but Reed took Furnace Gremlin, which pans out well for him because he takes another Dreg Recycler, and then pack one, pick eight gets Stormclaw Rager. So kind of teed up to do black-red sacrifice.
Right. And well, and this is the disadvantage of picking that Furia pick four, right? If
yes.
you take Invasion of Eldraine, you're set up to be black whatever.
Uh-huh.
And the way the draft has panned out, at least to this point, through pick eight, Reed is looking like he's on track to be black-red and then going to have to abandon Furia.
Mm-hmm. And then the pack rounds out on the wheel with just like a bunch of nothing cards, maybe a flywheel racer if he's interested in splashing, but like truly nothing worth mentioning here, pick 9 through 14.
Yeah, so at the end of pack one, Reed is black, for sure,
uh-huh.
with outs to pair anything with black at this point.
Right. I mean, he's got the Furnace Gremlin and the Stormclaw Rager. So I would, if I'm him, I'm like, I'd like to be black red, I think, especially with Rager going pick 8. That seems like it could be an open lane. But yeah, you have outs to pair it with anything.
All right. So moving on to pack 2, we've got the, again, awkward reveal. Reed reveals Aetherblade Agent and Kenra Spellspear and Invasion of Mercadia. That's the red, the thrill of possibility battle, as it were. And then someone across the table from Reed opened Vorin Klex, so not really affecting Reed's draft at all. But again, pretty weird to not have all of the information here as a viewer. And then we move into pack two. So not a ton of information to be gleaned there for Reed. So we see Reed's pack one, pick one. In the commons, he's got Aetherblade Agent. That's the 1/1 death touch that can flip into something that'll draw you cards on hit. We've got Cosmic Hunger, the green common fight spell. Ephara's Dispersal, the blue bounce spell. And then in the uncommons, we've got Kenra Spellspear and Invasion of Mercadia as some red uncommons that would be good for Reed, as well as Phyrexian Gargantua, the 4/4 that when ETBs, you draw two cards and lose two life.
That card has impressed me. I thought it was going to be just like Clunk City, like it was a cute throwback or whatever in this format. I think that card's good.
Yeah, I agree. It's good in the attrition decks, right? It's good in the decks that want a 1/1, 1/1, 1/1, keep the board clear, and then slam Phyrexian Gargantua to, you know, pull ahead in card advantage and board presence.
Right. I mean, I think it's quite good. Like red, black, I think it's quite good in the Rakdos deck because your curve is often so low. You have one of the problems with Gargantua is in this format in general is these like sort of medium powerful cards that are 5-6 mana. You just can't really afford to take because you're going to see better stuff. But like, the Rakdos deck, you often don't have stuff at the top of your curve, partially because all of those signposts are 2 mana or 3 mana that that you can slot this in, and it's nice.
Yeah, I've liked Gargantua. All that, though, is going to get trumped by our rare. We've got Boon Bringer Valkyrie in the rare slot for Reed. That's the 3-white-white angel with 4/4 flying, first strike, lifelink, and backup 1.
I don't complain about rares very often, Ben. Ooh, but I will say,
do you complain about Boonbringer Valkyrie?
I don't like Boonbringer. It's not as egregious. Sunfall is perhaps the only card in the format that actually tilts me. I get like, I do have a little tiny tilt in my heart when someone casts Sunfall against me. Boonbringer Valkyrie is kind of a close second, though.
Wow, that is way down my list of power rankings.
In terms of tilt power rankings?
In terms of, the tilt rare power rankings, not even near the top. We've got Tali like, up there. We've got Through the Breach. Like,
yeah.
Boonbringer Valkyrie's pretty tame. Dies to Doomblade, baby.
Dies to Doomblade, except like if you're aggressive, you're like it. All they
oh yeah,
get
your,
that, like,
your
red black
heart deck does sink.
Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
What the heck are you doing? Yeah, that's the only issue. But Reed's thrilled here, and it makes the Furia pick look a little better too.
Yeah, and I think once you open Boonbringer Valkyrie here, if you're Reed, like you're just locking in black white almost 100% of the time, right?
Yes, for sure.
And that's pretty much what happens through Reed's draft. We're going to kind of shortcut Reed's draft quite a bit here because his draft is largely straightforward, and I think he did a fine job with it, other than that one, maybe pack one, pick four pick that we've got a little bit of a disagreement with. Mm-hmm. And the next draft is a spicy one. So Reed's draft rounds out after getting this Angel pack two, pick one. He picks up some more black cards and is largely still almost mono black through pack two. And the packs are just weak. It's not like Reed is missing out on some other sick deck by, you know, staying heavy black here. He just hasn't seen a whole lot of reason to try to do anything other than black. So at the end of pack two, if we check in with Reed, he's got no removal other than his Invasion of Fiora, which I think ultimately ended up being kind of the tipping point for his deck, not doing as well as he would have liked.
But as you said, it's not like he's passed Deadly Derision or Final Flourish or anything like that.
Right. He just hasn't seen it. And he hasn't seen great removal in other colors either. Like, it's not like he's passed up on interaction options. So he's got the Wrath. He's got Render Inert, the Remove 5 Counters, Draw a Card, and Traumatic Revelation. Like, that's his interaction, which is not a great place to be. And I think a smidge light on power as well. Like, he's got the two bombs in Invasion and Boonbringer Valkyrie, but a lot of filler other than that. Mm-hmm. So we move on to pack three. Somebody else opened Arona in pack three. Don't really know who it was. And then Reed is revealing Blight Reaper Thalid and Invasion of Tolvada, which is the black white rare invasion. Huge sigh of relief for Reed, knowing that he's going to get a sweet rare here. This is three black white for a five defense battle. And when it ETBs, you return target non-battle permanent from your graveyard to the battlefield. And if you flip it, creature tokens you control get +1/+0 and have lifelink.
If you flip it, you win.
At the beginning of your end step, you can make a 1/1 white and black spirit creature token with flying.
Yeah, that card is incredible. He also gets a great rare in his color in Breach the Multiverse. The each player mills 10 for 7 mana, and then you put a creature or planeswalker card from each graveyard into play under your control. That's a tough pick.
It was wild.
Honestly, I'm like looking at it, I'm like, Blight Reaper Thalid would be a great pack three, pick one for him as well.
Yeah, just for his curve and to get the power level up a little lower in his curve.
Yeah. So what do you like there between Invasion and Breach?
I think I would take Breach ultimately, just as like the highest impact card that requires no work of you, right? If you don't flip Invasion of Tolvada, it's not insane. And it requires a certain board state. And Reed is not hyper-focused tempo pressure, has no removal to push his creatures through to try to attack the invasion. So I think with what Reed has right now, I would take Breach.
Yeah, that makes sense. I also like there is the fact that you pointed out that he is mono black here and that taking Breach, like there is a world, it's low because Valkyrie's so nuts, but there is a world where if he gets past really good red cards, and certainly if the red is removal, if he's getting Spites and Stoke the Flames or whatever, he could pivot back to black-red.
Yeah, I think that would not be crazy, especially with, you know, you've already got two powerful cards in Breach and Wrath. Although, does Wrath go down in value with the whole table knowing that you're Reduke and you have Invasion of Fiora?
Sure, and open deck lists, right? Like, so everybody's going to know that you have that. So I think that, yeah, it definitely goes down in value to an extent. It's still incredibly powerful.
Yes, and I think Wraths are way better than normal in this format too, just from how it plays out with battles and all that.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so the rest of pack three rounds out. Reed does pick up a Collective Nightmare as some interaction. Pick four, he gets hooked up with an Ayara, Widow of the Realm. That's the three mana rare that you can sacrifice a permanent and drain and gain equal to its mana cost, and then flips into a thing that reanimates stuff from the graveyard once a turn at combat. So very cool rare pickup there. And then not a ton else as far as power, and really only the Collective Nightmare as interaction. So if we look at Reed's final deck, it's almost mono black, and then he's got two Furias as well as the Boonbringer Valkyrie. He's got the Invasion of Fiora, he's got a Breach the Multiverse, and Phyrexian Gargantua at the top end. And then the bottom end is just a kind of a lot of derpy, filler-ish cards that you, I don't think, would be super happy to play. But this is a powerful-looking deck that has the issue of a little bit lack of interaction and a little bit lack of cohesive plan or synergy. Like, Reed's really relying on drawing and casting Boonbringer Valkyrie, his Invasion, and Breach the Multiverse.
Yeah.
So Reed's rounds went pretty unfortunately for him in round one and round two. Round one, he lost to bombs.com. Nathanakorn, Cassita Porn had two times Galton and Mavra, Thalion the Gitrog Monster, Atraxa Praetor's Voice, Vorinclex, Invasion of Alara, Tribute to the World Tree. like Double Tangled Skyline, Triple Cosmic Hunger, just the business. Mana base was maybe a little smooth, but he had no mana problems against Reed, and Reed was just kind of outpowered here. And then in round two, he lost to Marco Camaluzzi, who I think had a fine deck, a very good red-white aggro deck, and Reed just kind of missed some land drops in the third game, and Marco curved out. So some tight games there, and lost in three to Marco. So Reed started out 0-2.
Yeah, that's a bummer. And worth pointing out that I believe the person who faced the Nothicorns deck was the 3-0 from the pod.
Yes, that deck did 3-0.
Let's get to Nathan Stoyer on day two. He's in the feature pod draft area with all that. That top table is just stacked. Jim Davis, Javier Dominguez, who is now in top eight. Both he and Nathan made a top eight that'll be playing out today. So what Nathan reveals is new Elesh Norn. Again, that's the 4-mana 3/5 flips into the Saga. I got to get one of my opponents the other day. They sacked their three creatures, and then in response to it, before it flipped, I got to kill it. Which is pretty
what a beating.
Yeah. And also Invasion of New Capenna. That's the white-black sort of Bone Splinters variant that flips into the equipment. And Rona, the 1 and a blue 1/3 looter flip card, was opened directly to Nathan's left. So passing to someone who is likely to be taking a blue card there and want to be blue. So pretty clear Elesh Norn. Like, I don't think there's other cards that I would take over it. Artistic Refusal, the Convoke counter and draw two, discard one spell. Streetwise Brawler, the green, 1 and a green, 0-2 with backup one, deals damage equal to its toughness. Inga Runeye, 4-mana, scry three. You're just taking Elesh Norn.
You're just taking Elesh Norn. 100% of the time, I do that. Nathan agrees. So both of us are basically the world champion, I think.
Absolutely. You and Nathan have both top eighted the last three Pro Tours. So that's that seems pretty good. Pick two. We're already going to start to diverge here. Very interesting choices here. So Nathan sees Phyrexian Awakening. That's the 3-mana white enchantment. You incubate four and your Phyrexians have Vigilance. Knight Errant of Eos. This is the 4 and a white 4/4 with Convoke. And when it enters the battlefield, you get to look at the top X cards of your library, where X is the number of creatures you tapped. And then you get to reveal any number of those creatures. Where X is the number of creatures you tap to cast it, and you get to reveal up to two creatures, I think, from among those cards that have mana value less than the blah, 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 whatever. Sculpted Perfection is also in this pack, is another incubate enchantment that's 2 white-black. You incubate 2 in ETBs, and your Phyrexians get +1/+1. There's also Invasion of Xerex, that's the bounce a thing, white-blue battle, and Cyber Cryptomancer, the 0-1 with Hexproof that has backup 1.
Yeah, this is an interesting pack here. I think, for me, I would be trying to decide between Phyrexian Awakening and Knight Errant of Eos. When Knight Errant pops off, specifically if you are in a white aggressive deck, it's really good. But also, it has some setup cost to be really good, and Phyrexian Awakening is just always good from what I've seen. Just a very powerful card. If you play that on three and then flip your thing over into a 4/4 on turn four, you're pretty stable Mabel, and oftentimes also pressuring your opponent in addition to being stable thanks to the Vigilance. I think I would take Phyrexian Awakening here to follow up Elesh Norn, just get myself deeper into white, stay open, and know that I've got a great card that has no setup cost.
Well, and it's you're kind of doing a similar thing. Like, if this were, so let me ask you this. We haven't had a good let me ask you this in a while. If this were pack one, pick one, would you always want to be thinking about packs in a vacuum because it sort of just lets you think about power level? Pack one, pick one, what would you take out of this?
Ooh, I think I might take Knight Errant, pack one, pick one.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Let me build around it as the most powerful. It's a lot closer for me. I might still chicken out and take Phyrexian Awakening at the Pro Tour just because I know it's going to do the thing.
Right.
If I'm on Arena, pack one, pick one, I would take Knight Errant of Eos. I don't know. That would be really hard. I don't feel like I know the format or those two cards well enough to definitively say what I think is better, pack one, pick one.
Yeah, but you're taking a white card here. So it's a nice that, like, you have Elesh Norn, you know you want to be white, and you get to take a powerful white card here. I agree. I would also take Phyrexian Awakening, and I've cast and drawn creatures a fair amount off of Knight Errant of Eos, but I like Phyrexian Awakening just a bit more. Again, sort of like a higher, what you were talking about, like, there's a higher floor to that card.
Yeah. And Nathan takes Sculpted Perfection here, which I want to know what his thought process was. You know, I wish we could just, like, interview him and say, hey, what, like, do you still make this pick? Do you agree with it? I just want to know in hindsight how he feels about that pick, because I think it had huge ripples for his draft from this point onward.
I agree. Yeah. And Nathan is a very good Magic player, obviously, right? He's at the top table on day two of a Pro Tour. He top eighted. He's sort of a wonderkind these days. I think he's taken Sculpted Perfection for a reason. I just want to know what those reasons are because they're not on my radar.
Yes, I agree.
All right, pick three. He sees Quende, Pride of Femrif. That's the three and a white, 2/2 with double strike, and your first strikers have double strike. Rampaging Geoderm is the red-green signpost. It's a 3/3 with trample and haste. Oracle of Tragedy, the one and a blue 1/3 that loots. Failed Conversion as the -4/-4 aura, and a Pyretic Prankster, the red 2-mana, 2/1 that flips into a 3/2.
Yeah, not what you want to see here if you're Nathan, because this is a pretty weak pack with no real direction for you, right?
Right.
After taking Sculpted Perfection, Quende does not go in white-black. That's essentially a blue-white gold card, I think, in the format for the most part.
Right.
Oracle of Tragedy, great 2-drop, but a little awkward, like doesn't go with the Sculpted Perfection at all. So I think if you're Nathan and you've taken Sculpted Perfection, I actually kind of like what he took here, which is Rampaging Geoderm. Like, you're just taking the best card out of the pack. You're showing you're willing to move off Eleshnorn and white if need be, but you're probably also just putting no weight on this pack at all. But if you take Eleshnorn into Phyrexian Awakening and you're white, all of a sudden Oracle of Tragedy starts to look much more appealing. Quende starts to look much more appealing as just a good 4-drop, and maybe you can navigate your way into blue-white. I think he passed on Oracle here, partially because his neighbor had opened that Rona to his left, and he's thinking, well, I probably am not going to be blue because I won't see any impact too, but I don't think you really care what your neighbor's doing. And maybe he's not thinking that at all. I have no idea. And again, not the world champ. But I think if you go Eleshnorn into Awakening and you take Oracle here, you're on track to draft a pretty good deck and one of the better decks in the format, right?
Yeah. I mean, again, I think, feel like this goes back to, I'm just wondering if I'm higher on Oracle of Tragedy than I should be.
Maybe that's true. But you can also then take Quende and feel fine about the Quende pick here and stay on track to be white. And along with that Quende pick, you could also make the argument, much like I was kind of saying with Reed, like there's two things the table's going to do. If they see that you opened Eleshnorn, they're either going to steer away from white, the people that are passing to you, or they're going to think, well, I could move into white and I could push, like it's a double-edged sword, right? People could push you off of white so that you can't play the Eleshnorn. But if you get yourself deep into white, like if you go Eleshnorn into Awakening into Quende, even if you get pushed off white, you can find another color open enough to pair with those three white cards you got, right? So getting those first three picks all to be the same color gives you some flexibility down the draft, even if white's not open, you know, to be able to still be white and play Eleshnorn.
Yeah, no, that all checks out. So pick four, he's got a Sunder the Gateway as an option. This is the one and a white sorcery. You can either blow up a non-token artifact or enchantment and incubate two, or you can incubate two and then transform an incubate token. Jeru and Hazoret, this is the red-white 5-drop. It's a 5/4, I think, has like Vigilance and Haste if you have one or fewer cards in hand and finds legendary creatures. Ingarunize, again, 4-mana, 3/3, scry 3 on ETB. One of the blue invasions, we couldn't tell if it was Vryn or Invasion of Kamigawa, but either way, I think if we're thinking about a blue card, I'd take Inga over both of those invasions.
Yeah, and I think with the way this draft has gone so far, you've got your Eleshnorn, you've got your Sculpted Perfection, you essentially blanked on pack three. I think you're taking Sunder the Gateway no matter what you've done here, just as a good white 2-drop. Also especially happy if you're Nathan that it pairs well with Sculpted Perfection, making you know, a Phyrexian token to get +1/+1. That pulls up the value of Sunder quite a bit, but I love the Sunder pick here.
Pick five, no real white cards in contention. I mean, I guess there's a Tarkir Duneshaper, the single white 1/2 that flips into a 4/3 with trample. I do not like that card very much. There's another Cybo Cryptomancer, the hexproof flash creature in blue, a Ravenous Sailback, the 5-mana 3/4 in green that either has haste when it ETBs or blows up an artifact or an enchantment, and a Traumatic Revelation. Ben, you love this card. This is one of the black, look at your opponent's hand, the warm and fuzzy feelings. You look at your opponent's hand, you can choose a creature of battle from among the cards and have them discard it, or you can incubate three.
I've come down on it. I think my love of that card is partially why my blue-black decks haven't been doing as well. Okay. I've cooled on that card. I mean, it's good. I'll still play it, but I'm never playing more than one, I don't think. So I think looking at this pack, if you're Nathan, this is a pretty clear Traumatic Revelation because you've kind of set yourself up to be black-white with the Sculpted Perfection pick, but we don't really have a reason to be black other than Sculpted Perfection and could have, in fact, avoided that by taking the Phyrexian Awakening. And then if you take Awakening and maybe you've taken Oracle earlier, like all of a sudden you could be whatever here and you could take maybe a better card, I think, in Cryptomancer and maybe you're white, mono white, and you want to dip into black for the Traumatic Revelation. This is a weak pack and you don't put much stock in it regardless. But I think if you don't take Sculpted Perfection, you feel much less compelled to take Traumatic Revelation here. You could take Cryptomancer. You could take Tarkir Doomshaper even to stay white. I mean, I don't love that as much, but certainly an option.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's all fair. I think I would have gone Oracle 3 into Inga 4, and then here I'm taking Cryptomancer, so I'd get maybe mistakenly deeper into blue. You know, someone's got to draft blue at the Pro Tour, even though it's the best color. Why can't it be me?
Yeah, for sure.
Pick 6 picks up another black common and etched familiar, the 3-mana 3/2. When it dies, you drain 2. But he could have just grabbed, there's a Kithkin Billy Rider, which is equally filler, the 3-mana 1/3 double strike knight, you know?
Yeah. And well, an etched familiar goes makes sense for him with the Sculpted Perfection, right? Because it's a Phyrexian fox.
Sure.
So it's going to turn into a 4/3. So I think if you do have the Sculpted Perfection, you take etched familiar here. But all of a sudden, again, if you don't have that Sculpted Perfection and you've got Awakening, then you take Kithkin Billy Rider here, right? To get deeper into white, because you've no interest in the fox without Sculpted Perfection.
I mean, so maybe he just thinks perfection is a lot better than we do.
It's certainly possible. I can't imagine it is that much better that it's worth dipping into a second color for. That's hard for me to wrap my head around. But again, maybe they know stuff about pod drafting that we don't, because we also saw Reed kind of steer into white-black as well.
Yeah. Maybe some testing teams were like, hey, this is underrated, but also pretty good, and here's how it works. Because he grabs another Son of the Gateway, pick 7, picks up a Rouse Reinforcements, pick 8, as again, just sort of a hedge towards maybe all the way back to that Rampaging Geoderm, just thinking what's open, thinks it's the best card there. And then pick 9, he does wheel, and again, this might have been on his mind. He wheels Invasion of New Capenna. That's a white-black battle. When it ECBs, you can sack a creature artifact. If you do, you destroy a creature artifact and flips into an equipment that effectively boosts the power of Phyrexians, right? You equip it to something when it attacks. You put a ++1 counter on that creature and all other creatures you control that share its creature type.
The Holy Frazzle Cannon, baby.
The Holy Frazzle Cannon. Thank you very much. So maybe it was that? Do we think that's possible that he
it's
was
possible.
Like...
possible. He knew that was in his pack one and took perfection. Okay, I'm going to try to be that. But at what cost, right?
Right.
Because well, in the next pack, we see... So in that pack, there's Inga Runeyes that if he had taken the heavier white path, he could have wheeled Inga Runeyes, which is a great wheel at a Pro Tour draft, I think. And then pick 10 sees a pack with Invasion of Xerex on the wheel, which is crazy. That card should never wheel, right?
It can wheel.
It can wheel, I guess.
I'm okay with the wheeling.
It's very good. Like, you're thrilled if you get it on the wheel in blue-white.
Sure, yes. Like, I would be like, oh, cool, pick 10. But I'm not like, I wouldn't be compelled to say the age-old quote, what is this still doing in the pack?
Yeah. But yes. Okay. So I'm more excited about Invasion of Xerex wheeling than I am Invasion of New Capenna wheeling.
I agree. But I'm thinking, but that wasn't information that Nathan had at the time. And so I'm wondering if that was part of why he took the perfection and steered towards black white.
Yeah. I mean, you could have also, I think, made the argument, though, that pack one, pick two, if you take Awakening, you have a chance to wheel either Sculpted Perfection or Invasion of Xerex.
Yes. No, I'm with you. I'm not walking it back. I'm just trying to get inside the mind, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Get ourselves primed for world championships. Good.
Exactly.
All right. So the rest of pack one shakes out. There's a Saiba Cryptomancer again, very late. Pick 13, right?
Yeah. Yeah,
very late. So could have, I think, drafted differently and been set up to go white, whatever, including white blue, but just could have been way deeper into white. And the packs were pretty weak, but he kind of committed for that Sculpted Perfection. And I just think that pick had huge ripples for his draft and causes some very interesting things to happen in pack two.
Okay, so what goes on in pack two?
All right, so pack two, Nathan's reveals are blanks. Javier shows an Invasion of Ikoria, which is not super relevant. And then Jim Davis reveals an Invasion of New Phyrexia. That's the white-blue mythic that flips into the Teferi Planeswalker. And Jim is 3 seats to Nathan's left. So okay. He can kind of assume that he's going to maybe see some white and some blue, but then likely drying up. And he's also already expecting to not see blue.
Right, because of the Rona that he assumes was taken directly to his left. So he's assuming now blue and potentially white with Jim, depending on like what's the splash for him, are going to get cut in pack two. Yeah. So pack one, pick one, he sees Invasion of Arcavios. That's the blue find a thing from your sideboard battle. You're not taking that. Stormclaw Rager, 1 black red, sacrifice outlet. Vanquish the Weak, the 3-mana kill a thing with power 3 or less in black. Not a very good pack here.
Yeah, it's a terrible pack. And I think he takes what is just the best card of the pack in Stormclaw Rager.
Thinking about how pack one went, it's just tough to be like, does that make your deck? Like, what is the path where this makes your deck? Well, we're going to see it.
We're going to see it.
Pack two, he's got an Eyes of Gitaxias. He's got a Deadly Derision, a black removal spell, a Scornblade Berserker, the single black 0-1 with backup one, and you pay one to sacrifice the creature to draw a card. Corruption of Tawashi is a card I like quite a bit. Goes with his Phyrexian stuff. The 5-mana enchantment makes a 4 incubate token, and whenever you transform something for the first time each turn, you draw a card. What do you like here?
I think after taking Stormclaw Rager, this pack doesn't have a lot of great cards in it for you, particularly. You're worried about getting into blue, right? Because you expect blue to get cut from that Rona that was open to your left in pack one, pick one. So like seeing this blue here is not a signal at all because it's just early. I think I would take Deadly Derision as the best card in the pack after picking up Stormclaw Rager. You're already, you know, thinking you're white-black. Maybe you can pivot into black-red. So I like the Derision here.
Okay. Pick three, he's got an Izumi Informant, a Phyrexian Gargantua, an Unseal the Necropolis. That's the 3-mana. Each player mills 3, and then you can return up to 2 creature cards from your graveyard to your hand. And an Alabaster Host Sanctifier. That's the 1 and a white 2/2 lifelinker.
Yeah, this is an interesting pick here. So I think if you're Nathan, you're probably still thinking you're black-white. At least that's what I would be thinking. Like, I just had that unlucky pack 2, pick 1, where I took the Stormclaw Rager. You could think about taking Nizumi Informant or even Phyrexian Gargantua, although I don't think Nathan really needs top end at this point. Probably just right. Wants to get the bottom of his curve filled out. There's a world where you take Informant and you're open to black-white or black-red, but I think if you're thinking you're white-black, Alabaster Host Sanctifier probably gets the nod because also it's a Phyrexian cleric. So it'll be that 3/3 lifelink with the enchantment that he picked up pack one, pick two. So I like the Host Sanctifier pick if you're thinking you're black-white here.
Yeah, I mean, he has to think still, like, what's my best, like, where's my power? And his power is in Elishnorn, like, by far.
Well, and his second best card is Sculpted Perfection.
Right.
For better or for worse.
Yeah. So I think this makes total sense to me that he still thinks he's white and white whatever. I guess it's just about, like, what do you think Alabaster Host Sanctifier's power is versus those black cards? But also it might be about, do you expect you're about to get cut on white? Take the white cards while you can.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, certainly.
Pick four, he sees a Ravenous Sailback, a Kenra Spellspear, the red flip card, and an Angelic Intervention. That's the 1 and a white +1/+1 counter and protection until end of turn trick.
Yeah, I think you're still thinking you're white-black. No reason to deviate from that. I think you take Angelic Intervention here.
Okay, so then he grabs a Gift of Completion over no white cards. Pick six, he grabs a Dreg Recycler, again, over no white cards. And then pick seven, there's another Stormclaw Rager, another black-red Signpost Sack Outlet.
And he takes it over Furia, the white-black 2/4 lifelinking angel, which is kind of wild. So I think by taking Stormclaw Rager here, he's saying, like, I'm willing to go black-red.
And go black-red he does, right? I mean, he gets a red-white land next, the Windscarred Crag, a red cap Heel Slasher, the first strike 4-drop with backup 1 in red on the wheel. Like, he's kind of bopping around. He has outs, right, to splash some white now, maybe, with the Windscarred Crag. So maybe he's thinking about splashing Sculpted Perfection, but it seems like he's going into red-black.
Yeah, I think at the end of pack two, he's open to be either white-black or red-black. Mm-hmm. Which is a pretty nice spot to be, especially since he seems like he felt he got pushed out of white a little bit. And I'm wondering if there are some other cards that were opened that he know, like, there's just other information he has that we don't have as viewers, right? Because we didn't get to see all of the revealed cards. So he might think, man, too many people are white. I am getting out, you know? Like, I wonder if that's somewhere rooting around in his head. But I also want to make mention, too, in pack two, he passed some late stuff that could have been awesome for blue-white. Like, pick six, a Zalfurion Lancer and an Invasion of Vryn. Pick eight, there's another Invasion of Xerix. That's the blue-white uncommon. Another Zalfurion Lancer. He could have gotten some early blue, some early white in some of those picks. He could have very easily been blue-white in his seat as well. And I would make the case that he should have been blue-white in his seat.
Yeah, I wonder if that just, if it was, it has to have been more than just the Rona to his left that was giving him a little bit of cold feet about blue, right?
I don't know. I mean, that's certainly a reason to maybe potentially stay out of blue. But again, you don't really care what the person to your left is doing in draft. You probably care more at the Pro Tour because people are better at Magic, you know, than you do in a random arena pod. So there's probably more weight to it than I'm saying, but I just think it's really interesting.
Yeah, and pack three, pick one continues to be really interesting in that he's got a lot of picks for this potential black-red deck, and I'm curious what you would take here. So his rare flip is Iara, Widow of the Realm. That's the one black-black. 3-3. You can tap and sack a thing to deal damage equal to its power, I believe, to a battle or player, and you gain that much life. Flips into a thing that returns something from your graveyard for a turn. Deadly Derision, another black removal spell. And Invasion of Mercadia, the battle that lets you discard a card and then draw two, and then flips into the 3-3 that, you know, makes 1/1s and gives everything plus one plus one and haste until end of turn. Those are three banger options.
I like the Deadly Derision. I think you need the removal spell here. Your deck's not great at this point, so you want to make sure that you can answer your bombs. You've also seen a lot of bombs opened at the table that Deadly Derision deals with cleanly, right? You've seen Vorinclex open, you've seen Rona open. Like, you know there are individual cards that you are going to need to kill.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And the treasure you get from Derision plays so nicely with the double Stormclaw Rager.
Right, that you're potentially splashing in a white-black deck at this point, if you're Nathan, yeah.
Yeah. Pick two, he's got another removal spell option in Final Flourish versus some white cards with Cut Short, the kill a tapped creature or a planeswalker that was activated with Convoke, and Sigiled Sentinel, the 3-mana 2/2 with Vigilance and Backup 1.
Yeah, I think you take Final Flourish here. Similar reasoning, like you love the interaction here.
And we're getting a little bit of a full circle jury duty here on Act 3, Pick 3. Jury Master of the Review is here for Nathan to go with his Stormclaw Ragers, to go with these treasures he's making from Deadly Derisions. That's black-red for the 1-1. Grows whenever you sacrifice something, and then when it dies, deal damage equal to its power to any target.
Yeah, he pulls the trigger on the jury, and I think with this pick, solidifies himself into black-red, gets a Dreg Recycler, like the pack rounds out, and he ends up in a functional black-red deck. I think not a great deck, but certainly given how his draft started, a really brave pivot and a really cool pivot. And I think probably the right thing for him to do, given how his draft started with that Sculpted Perfection pick. Mm-hmm. But there's also an alternate universe where he gets deeper into white in pack one and then reaps the rewards in pack three for blue white. And again, hindsight's 2020, but I do think I would make the case that it's right to get deeper into white in pack one. And so he passes in pack three, pick four, Marshal of Zalfir, the blue white pumps soldiers. He passes Preening Champion and then pick seven, another Marshal of Zalfir. He wheels like some good stuff in blue white. He wheels a Marshal pick 12. Like, he could have had the goods in blue white potentially. And instead he actually pivoted to red black underneath Simon Nielsen, Oof. Who was passing directly to him. So he kind of got lucky in pack three that the packs were stacked with black and red cards to end up with, because he had a great pack three, like underneath someone who was drafting black red.
Right. Yeah, that's hard to do for sure.
So a super interesting draft there. And I do like his pivot into red black, given what he did in pack one, I think.
But you would have probably ended up in blue white.
I would have 100% ended up in blue white in the seat.
Yeah.
And not necessarily, I think I would have taken the Oracle of Tragedy pack one, pick three. But even if you don't do that, those other picks that were really weak in pack one, like picks 5-8, you're just able to take white cards there to stay white because there's no reason for you to be anywhere other than white. Power level wise.
Right. Because you have the Elesh Norn and the Phyrexian Awakening.
Right.
Yeah. No, really, really interesting. And Nathan ends up going 2-0-1 with this draft, right? Wins his first two rounds and then does an intentional draw against his teammate round three.
Yeah. Just beats Simon Nielsen, who's red black passing to him. Like, that's wild.
Savage. Truly savage. What a guy. What can you do? I mean, world champ. There you have it. Jury duty in our drafts and jury duty for Nathan on day two.
You love to see it.
Love to see it.
All right. Great place to wrap us up. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
Thank you so much to CoolStuffInc.com for sponsoring this podcast. Go over there and use code LOL for 5% off of anything that you purchase, anything that you want over there. Plus, they got a lot of great free content, as we talked about. CoolStuffInc.com, where they have cool stuff in stock. You can check out all of our other content. I'm not streaming so much these days, but I am at twitch.tv/LordTupperware. Ben's at twitch.tv/MrMetronome. I'm throwing up some videos on our YouTube channel. All of that content, plus our tier lists, plus our merch, plus ways to contact us, all that good stuff is at our website, lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, you can shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.